Welcome home. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson of Baltimore. We are Baltimore Positive, positively getting the Maryland Crab Cake Tour back out on the road. We will be on Wednesday with another one of my journalist friends. Dan Rodericks is doing a 1966 show over at the BMA. I would tell you to go get tickets, but it's sold out. Dan can't even find room for me. So on Wednesday, we'll be over at Gertrude's, my cousin's place. That's John Shields' place. My son married into the Shields family happily. And I happily will have some collard greens and delicious vegan crab cakes on Wednesday at Gertrude's. Friday, we will be at Costas in Dundalk with a bunch of friends, including a big baseball preview, which is what this segment's primarily going to be about. And then on Tuesday, the 10th, we'll be at Missoni's. And of course, the great name Greg Missoni harkens back to Chuck and Brooks and Scotty on Channel 2. So we'll be doing that on Tuesday, the 10th of March, up in Perry Hall. This guy's been my friend and my mentor for 4 decades. He doesn't realize it, but we're celebrating the 40th anniversary of our relationship. It was 40 years ago on January the 6th of this year that I began my journey at the Baltimore Sun. John Eisenberg was a takeout writer back then on Sports 2, running around with Joe Don Looney, amongst others, and a transplant from Philadelphia via Dallas. And he never left. The Oriole magic got into his blood, and he's doing Oriole magic in baseball. But John, first things first, how are you? It's been a little while since I've had you on. I didn't bother you much during the John Harbaugh, Jesse Minter, Steve, but I know you were circling all of these things. How you been?
Definitely.
How's your winter?
Well, I excuse me. I will say, my winter's been fine, and yes, I have been, even with nowhere to write anymore. People ask me, "What do you think about Harbaugh?" You know, and I'm like, "Well,
People ask me
since
what
you
they think
asked,
about Jesse Minter, and I'm like, "He isn't good. What do you want me to say?" I mean, that's what I
yeah."
wrote this week. How do we grade him? We can't grade him until September, right?
No. I mean, I knew him a little bit. I mean, my last full-time job, I was actually in the building there writing stuff, and you know, he's at lunch. So I mean, you know, I know him a little bit, and was always just like I knew Mike McDonald. Actually, I used to do a podcast for the Ravens. He was on it, and you know, I knew McDonald, know McDonald pretty well. Big fan, long before he became you know, the head coach of the Seahawks. And Minter is, you know, cut from some of the same cloth, just a fairly young, smart, impressive guy. So we'll see how, you never know what that means as a head coach. McDonald, I felt like, whoa, now that is a guy they should not let out of the building. I felt that way a long before they did let him out of the building. But you know, Minter is a good, seemed like a good hire, honestly, to me. We'll see how it goes.
My personal feelings for John Harbaugh are well read. I am writing literally, I'm a man of letters because of people like you. Beginning March 1st, I'm writing letters all of March to people. I'm going to write to Steve Bisciotti. I'm going to write to Katie Gray. I'm going to write to everybody. But John Harbaugh, I know for a fact he didn't like you. So I how did you feel about him?
Well,
Because you just went
yes,
on about
now.
McDonald not letting him out of the building. Not letting him out of the building would have meant throwing John out of the building at that
Right.
point. At that point, right?
Right. It just wasn't going to happen. The timing was wrong. I would think that maybe the Ravens, Steve Bisciotti probably recognized that. But it was coming off, it was after the 23 season, which was one of the best regular seasons of Harbaugh's tenure. They were a number one seed in the AFC, right? And lost to the Chiefs in the AFC Championship game at home. By the way, if you know, if I think if they had won that game, I don't think there would have been a change made this year. 2 years removed from an AFC Championship victory, I don't think you would have seen a change. But anyway, that game, you know, there was no way they were going to. I mean, McDonald left after that, and you're not letting the coach leave after he makes it to the AFC Championship game. So there was no way. So that's just the way it goes. But so yeah, you know, Harbaugh, no, I mean, you know, we were definitely up and down. I was out of the building, I was inside the building. He sometimes didn't like things and was never afraid to point it out to me, and so we butted heads
He didn't
a
like
fair
truth.
amount.
He didn't like truth. And he went
yeah
and worked for a guy who was on Epstein Island and
yeah
and no speaking, no, and he pulled the power play in New York in that
Yeah.
4-day period to get all of the control,
Yeah, he
and
had it.
he's living his best life doing the Papa wave at Knicks games. It is unbelievable how he is perceived there, even by, I mean, look, I've had Ian on the show, I've had reporters on the whole deal. Like, he's going to go save the Giants, and here he was yesterday's news for a lot of us who dealt with him, and a lot of us who have paid attention to the message, and a lot of people that manage second half blown leads, playoff losses, the fact that Lamar has won MVPs and hasn't won playoff games, like his relationship with Lamar. Just in a general sense, he has completely pulled the Tony Soprano hustle. He's going to run New Jersey now. Like, literally.
Well, he
And that's
is.
fascinating to watch. It is.
Well, it just shows you the differences of franchises. It really does. I mean, the Giants are desperate. They are really desperate. And they needed some stability. They needed a track record. They needed a guy that knows how to do that. And I'll say that even if I butted heads with him over the years, I mean, I will all the things you point to, the blown leads and Lamar and all that, he had a good record and he won a lot of games and he's a pretty good coach.
I told him to his face dozens of times, you're a hell of a coach, but there was never a but with him, and Buck got me thrown out of the media. So he is individually responsible for trying to wreck my career. So I have a say in it. I my line's going to be heard, but I also know he didn't like you. He didn't like a lot of people. He didn't like anyone who would ask him a tough question. And I think New York's going to be an interesting place if he's not
Well, it's gonna
13
be,
and 4.
yeah, the post. The sports sections up there are not quite what they were, like all newspapers, I think. I mean, the Daily News barely has a sports section now. The Post is still fighting a little bit. So it's too bad. It's too bad. It wasn't like the 1990s when there was just every day snarling, about everything. And if you lose two games, forget about it. They're like eating you whole, like a
Well,
plate
he'll
of
always
ribs.
have the Jets below him there. So at least he has that go. Like, he had the Washington Commanders below him here forever, right?
It's
Like,
not the same. You got the Jets and you got I mean the Mets and I mean it's quite a market up there and it's fun. And you know what? I think it's going to go well. I think it'll go pretty well for him. I don't know. I don't know how high it will go. See, really there's three stages right in the NFL. You're a bottom tier team, you're in the great middle, or you're a top team, all right? The Ravens have been a top team. They've sunk to the middle here, certainly in this past year, and they want to get back up. That's a tough leap to climb. But you're at the bottom where the Giants have been for a while, and you want to get to the middle. That's really what they want to do. First and foremost, get us out of this bottom. It is really bad. You got to have a little hope. He can do that, and I think he will. And I think he'll do it pretty fast. So I think you'll see that. I don't know that the top tier's coming up there. That is tough, but I think he'll make them better. And I mean, he can do it, and I think we'll see it.
well, I guess it's 75 years of they import Casey Stengel or Joe Torre or, Phil Jackson or Pat Riley, whatever it is, he's the next part of that. And I'm not gonna let it pass without saying on John Harbaugh and on all of that. I don't root against him, but there is a point for people, like when I would sit with him. The first 6, 7, 8 years, I sort of bought what he was selling. They won a Super Bowl, even when I thought he was a little out of line, a little out of balance. And then I watched his speeches at the Fellowship of Christian Athletes, and then his words, and then the deeds didn't sort of match up over that. But it was in moments, and I will say this with full conviction for you, as my friend and mentor in 40 years, when he would shat upon you in my presence in his office at 8 in the morning, I would look at him and think, and this is maybe speaks how I feel about you. You don't like John Eisenberg. Like, what's wrong with you? You know what? I'm like, I literally thought you were the fairest, most balanced, most cerebral, non-mean. You were never mean. Jackman was mean. Kenny Rosenthal could be mean. You were like, to me, Litwin was mean. I'm mean. You were like, I thought, how could you? You were like the most balanced journalist there is. You were so good, the Washington Post might have hired you one day.
Well, thank you. I don't know about it. Well, they didn't.
Yeah.
So,
You wanted a gig too, did you? No, I mean,
yeah.
which leads me to where we were talking about New York and being tough on Harbaugh and all that. Boy, the Washington Post, and I'm sitting here with the venerable Baltimore Sun columnist who's now been gone 15 years. How long have you been gone from there? A long time, right?
Longer, let's see, 2007, so 19
Jesus,
years.
you've been gone 20 years and I still think you're in the paper every day. Like, it's
Yeah.
crazy, but that's what's happened to journalism, which makes it easier for John Harbaugh, makes it easier for Chad Steele to throw me
No
on. I'll
question.
never meet Jesse Minter. Somebody sent me a note and said, "What about Jesse Minter?" I'm like, "You don't understand. They don't even, coaches don't even come out and shake hands. John Harbaugh didn't run into anybody pumping gas in this city. John Harbaugh was never spotted in this city the last 10
Right.
years. Like, he just wasn't." And I, so
Right.
this sequestering of all of it and the Washington Post going out of business is just, it's unthinkable for people like you and me that always sent George Solomon, notes and said, "Please hire me."
Yeah. Well, it's really sad and shocking. I mean, I would say it's shocking, but the New York Times did it, what, 2 or 3 years before that. Got rid of the sports section. Of course, they had bought the Athletic, and so just sort of corporately replaced it with the Athletic, which, it's okay. The Athletic has some good stuff, and a lot of attention's being paid to it. I don't think it's as good as the people that were writing in the New York Times. You're not going to see what you're talking about is okay. The morning after the Super Bowl, all right, good Super Bowl this year. Who did you want to read? This is, and I hate to be an old guy, complaining about the way things used to be, but it used to be after a good event, okay, a good sports event, Winter Olympics had just happened. It used to be there was an array of just great column voices from different cities that you would want to read. That's what I wanted to know, their perspective. I'm just not seeing that around anymore. And to me, that's just sad. It's just the way it's gone. And people want different things out of their sports coverage. They see everything now. Everything's on television. And as a result, and everything's online too. And as a result, and this is something you and I have talked about before, the nature of access has just changed dramatically in those 20 years that I've been gone. You can't get to people anymore. The Oriole Clubhouse when I was working was open for like 3 hours before a game. And now I think it's like I went to one game this past year with the press pass, 45 minutes, I think it's open.
Well,
And
Luke
nobody was
always
in
tells
there.
me if they ever gave you a press pass back, you would be really unhappy anyway because you wouldn't see anybody, meet anybody, you'd get bad hot dogs and they would tell you where to stand and wouldn't be very nice to you. And like, so when Mark Fine informed me 3 weeks ago that I'm not a real media member, which is a joke, which is speaks to them. It's like I don't even know where the place is when there is no Washington Post and people like Dave Shinen and people like Mark Maskey are no longer around and will never be around again because the next group, they won't say, "You're with the Post, we're going to let you in." Feinstein's dead. I mean, like, I just think about all of this change and how it could possibly be good for sports or sports fans, or even really, and this is what my letter to Katie Griggs is going to be about. You're a last place team. You lost a half a million people last year. Jim Palmer came up to me at Henneman's funeral and told me how poorly you treat Jim Palmer. And I'm thinking, if you don't want me down there, I'll sit here and get the app for $99 or whatever I get on cable television and opine as someone who's witnessed this for 60 years. But Henneman's dead. Craig Heist is dead. The people, Schmuck doesn't care anymore. Neither does Connolly. You care a lot, but you're doing more retrospective things with baseball. I'm thinking, like, don't you want your story told by people like us? No. Katie Griggs doesn't know from people like us. And David Rubenstein and his links to the Epstein files, that should be a huge story in our community. Instead, he's just going to run off and Arrigetti's going to move in and whatever it is. But the team on the field for you and I to move into that direction, I mean, they're a competitor. They're a contender. They've spent some money. There should be, you and I should be like glorifying them and wishing we could get down to Sarasota with Wick and Barry and watching a game together and putting hats on and saying, "New ownership's in, let's go, let's be about this." They can't even recruit the people who want to be recruited. I mean, it's really been a weird 2 years here. Bobblehead, Epstein files. I don't know where to go with it, but I love baseball. I love the Orioles, but people, I don't feel invited. I feel uninvited. I feel unwelcomed.
Well, you certainly have had a personal journey, and to say the least, and so have any member of the media. And so, that's different from the fans, you know, just the normal people. And it is interesting to get their perspective on it. And you know, I'm out and about a little, and I talk to people, and I hear some interesting things. And a lot of it's positive. I mean, of course, with the fans, the most important thing by far, of course, is the product on the field. I don't really care how we're treated. And
I do
yeah,
care how
it
the
should.
fans are treated when the Birdland memberships come out and everybody's pissed off. And I don't even know
Yeah.
what they're talking about. But last August, I mean, they were banning their biggest fans on Twitter and
Yeah.
stuff, like just doing dumb beyond treating me like dirt. Like
Yeah.
that's cool, but treating Jim Palmer poorly and not recruiting the
Yeah.
Mike Bordicks. And I mean, it's nice that Ryan Ripkins, that's great, but his father owns part of the team, allegedly. I don't know. But like all of it, I thought this was going to be a new page and a new day. And I feel like it's
Yeah.
that way with Alonso and with signing Bassett for 19 million bucks on Valentine's Day. Like they are doing some baseball things that you and I, in a baseball vernacular, could say, well, we're going to watch them this summer, but how much money am I going to give them? How much time above and
Well,
beyond the game is on to recruit me to get a Pete Alonso jersey? That's the part that I there's a real synapse and
yeah.
where they were with the trauma left behind with Peter, instead of trying to fix things like me that would have been easily fixable. All they have to do is be nice to me, treat me like a normal human being, and but they can't even do that with Jim Palmer. They can't figure that out.
Well, I think the prices are going up. You know, I that you know is a really, really certainly, yeah, the stuff with the tickets in the back in, was that in September or whenever they announced it at the end of a bad season. But yeah, they are, and that's what I've heard from a couple of people is they're you know, the price of going is going up. And so you always have to be careful with that. You got to be really careful.
In this
And you,
town, especially.
yeah, you better put a winning team on the field. People will get angry with you. And that honestly has, that's just universal. That's anywhere. But in this town, they'll smell it. You know, I recently on my bird tapes thing that I did, you know, I did an interview with Buck. Okay, which and I did part one ran, and I'm sure you've talked to Buck, and you know I really do enjoy talking to him, and especially now that it's been a few years and he can talk about it. And so I asked him, why did you come? You know, why did you do this? And he said, a lot of people told me not to do it, and he said, when I got here, what I found was people that had been talked to a lot, and they sort of had a BS detector. And you know, the town knows. The town can sniff it out. He says they know what's real and what's fake. And so I thought that was interesting. And look, you know, certainly a little bit of a warning shot to put down to anyone trying to do it from this point forward, because I think he's right. You know, you know, people will in this town, and what it's been 43 years since the World Series, so people have been talked to a lot enough, and that's what Buck said. We're done talking. We were done talking. It was, but I know it's what you want to see.
Have you
You
talked
know,
to David Rubenstein at all?
no, I have not talked to him. I'm going to send him a letter. You know, I'm going to send him a letter and say, you know, Mr. Rubenstein, you know, here I'm out here. Writing, I'm doing this Orioles history project. You like history? I'm publishing an Orioles history project on Substack. It's got thousands of subscribers. I'm talking to the old guys. It's all based on my book from 25 years ago. You know, you want to listen to a Jackie Brandt interview? I got it. So, you know, and just letting you know that it's out there. That's all I'm saying.
Well, I admire everything about what you're doing with the Oriole thing, and you sort of brought it back to life at the time 2, 3 years ago when it was trending in hey, I got all these young players and everybody's excited. They're going to have new ownership. Peter's dead. John's gone. Here we go. My guy, billionaire, good guy, philanthropist comes in and all of that stuff. Where are you on the current state of affairs and the team on the field in the summer ahead? And then we'll get to bird. I definitely want to talk bird tapes with you, John.
Well, you know, I think just on the team on the field. I mean, what I really liked seeing. I mean, sure, they put some money into it. They could have put more into it. I think it's a pretty good team. I think it's interesting. They don't have the ace pitcher, the number one playoff game starter. They got some nice pitchers.
Maybe they do by the end of the year, though.
It may
Maybe they
be
do.
Trevor Rogers. He looks, you know, to me, that's the real. I mean, he's unhittable down spring training. Not that that means anything, but
And they've got the firepower to steal for Scooble if such a thing were to happen, right?
they
I mean,
do. They do.
they've never had that before, and an owner that would take on money and like just it is a way more interesting thing from our perspective than it ever was with Peter because Peter was predictable.
Yeah.
You know,
Yeah.
there was
Yeah.
no there on March 1st back in the day. At least there is a thing now.
Listen, it's way more interesting, and the thing that's more interesting is what to me the mo almost the most important thing. That's nice. They've got Alonso, and they've brought in some veteran pitchers, better than last year's veteran pitchers, that's for sure. Is that you see, and this filters up during spring training. You see, because they have not, as much as they've succeeded in producing some major league players, they haven't really done it with pitching. This Michael Elias. Pipeline, but now you're starting to see a couple guys. They're Triple A, Trey Gibson, this Nelson German. You know, listen, the Blue Jays in the World Series last year had that Yes Cabbage kid that just came out of nowhere. Okay, and that's how you make it. That's how you make it. All right, you get some big stud that just nobody saw coming, and they're starting to have a little bit of that. The Latin operation. Let me tell you, in the 1990s, Baltimore Sun sent me down to the Dominican Republic to write a series of features about winter ball, and I wound up writing about the Orioles situation down there, which was one guy driving around in a truck with rice and beans in his in
It was
the back of
Carlos, right? Carlos?
Carlos Bernhardt, who
Yeah,
wound up being
baby. I love Carlos.
and so he drove me around and he said, I bring rice and beans to these kids, I found a double A catcher stirring cement by the side of the road, and it was meanwhile the Toronto Blue Jays had George League MVP, you wonder why they were winning World Series. The Orioles decades behind on that, and you wonder why they've gone so long without winning a World Series. But they would do
My
a little
name's
better with,
Aparicio. You don't have to tell me, you
yeah,
know. I could get
and
thrown in a meat wagon over in Highlandtown if I look the wrong way. So, yeah.
so you got to be careful with it. I've interviewed at the Bird Tapes Andy MacPhail. That one has not run yet. Interviewed Dan Duquette, and they both said, "Yeah, our Latin operation, we got some stuff out of it. This is the early to 2000s, but
Drafting Manny Machado is not the Latin operation.
no. But my point being, now there really is one, and there are pitchers and players coming, and so this Bisaccia's already here, and they got this Estrada as an infielder. That's when." To me, that's the most interesting thing to see. It's like, wow, the talent pipeline. Because if that becomes something that's viable, now that's getting interesting. You're talking about sort of a steady stream of talent, and they are putting money into signing these guys. And of course, Peter Angelos never really wanted to do that. He did not see the value, and it was R&D, to use an old business term, research and development, right? He said, wow, we got there's 10 of them. If we're going to sign 10 of them and eight of them aren't going to be any good, why are we doing that? It's like, well, you need
That's
those two.
baseball.
You need those two. You need those two really bad. And if you'll look at 30 something years without a World Series, that's why you need to do it. However, anyway, finally they're doing it. So that's really, to me, the most encouraging thing to see.
John Eisenberg's here. He always encourages me. He's got Bird Tapes and Substacks and writings of all writings. And we covered the Harbaugh football thing. We've covered the journalism thing. Let's cover some Bird Tapes here because, you did inspire me last year when you had Fred Lynn on. I got pissed off about it, and I went and found Fred Lynn, and I put Fred Lynn on my show because I. But some of these guys, like you
Great
said,
guy.
that I would know Buck. Like I've met Buck once in my life. It came under the terms of that I was not allowed to be where I was, but talk to him anyway because I was a bad guy. It was the night that Brady Anderson told me I should leave town. I was at the Sports Legends Museum, so I don't. So some of these people, when you get them. A, you're a great journalist, and whatever questions you'd ask would be better and different than anything I'm going to ask anyway. But there is a point where, like, the history of Oriole baseball, you're moving into this ownership space of it with the loss of Jim Henneman and my loss of interest, as well as some other people. But The thought of finding people, and like the other day, Luke brought up Nolan Reimold to me, and I'm like, there's a whole bunch of Oriole things. Melvin Moore is up the road. BJ Suroff's around here. That the Oriole history that you're trying to pull together. I want you to give me a little dissertation on where this thing began and where it is now, because I think you did it as sort of a fun book project a couple of years ago, but I think it's taken on its own life and space for you. And I hope the team wins to help you, if nothing else, you and Clancy.
Well, whatever. That I can't control. But what happened was, it came out of a book project that I did, really 1999, 2000, 2001. I went around the country interviewing everyone who'd ever done anything with the team to that point. Put together an oral history of the team. I was under contract to write a book, and I published it in 2001. And so then I went on with it's a big 500-page thing, and it covered as much as I could, the good, the bad, everything, the first 45 years of Oriole history. And then I moved on to other books, other things, wrote a lot of football, and left the Sun. And I had these little tapes sitting in my in a these micro cassette tapes that I'd recorded, gone to Las Vegas and interviewed Steve Barber, who was a school bus driver, the first 20 game winner in Orioles history. I had the history, entire history of the team, and a bunch of tapes sitting in a shoebox in my closet. All right, and I knew that they were in there,
You
and I
are an
did.
AI large language model dream. And I know you don't know what that means, but like, trust me,
Okay.
Anyway, go ahead. I've just gotten into AI recently and I'm thinking, oh man, what you could do with these tapes, but go ahead.
Well, I went old school. 20 something years later, I got them. I took them, pulled them out of the box, and got them digitized. You can hear it. You could hear it pretty well in a modern format, an MP3 or whatever. And I found a format, Substack, where you could put these things on there, good audio. And I said, people talk about, oh, beta testing, or focus groups. My focus groups was my kids and their spouses. I said, hey, listen, if I put out an Earl Weaver interview from 1999, will anyone want to hear it? And they were all like, hell yeah. So I did. So I started this project on Substack. The audio functionality is good. And yeah, I didn't know where it would go. I had like 40 interviews on tape. And so I'm now starting my third year. So I ran out of those original ones. I published them. I also started doing some new writing, just whatever I wanted to write, any nook and cranny in Oriole history. I said, well, let's write about Hoyt Wilhelm's no-hitter in 1958, or let's write about Gus Triandos. Who was he? Just sort of introducing him to modern readers. So I've done all that, and now I'm interviewing a new wave of people, because there's parts of my book, it stopped in 2000. It's like, well, there's been 20 something years. So I'm interviewing, I'm interviewing Buck, I interviewed JJ Hardy. I'm interviewing sort of the newer, trying to bring the story along, what happened in those years of Oriole history, while also still doing some of the old guys. And so it's just a project, and doing writing, and I'm expanding it a little bit. This week, as a matter of fact, I did something I was hesitant to do. I've really done it very seldom, but I wrote about myself, my family, and the history of baseball, and in my family. And it's something that I had in sitting in a folder for 10 or 15 years that I was moved to start writing when my son was playing college baseball. This is going back a ways. So I pulled it out. I looked at it. And I said, ooh, this might work on the bird tape. So I've been messing around with it. I published it this week. So all sorts of stuff at this site. And the reaction's been really, really good. I got thousands of subscribers, and people want to read about baseball and memories and Orioles and history. And it's just an ongoing thing. I'll just keep rolling with it.
How often will you get down the ballpark this year, John?
I don't go. You mean as a fan?
As a whatever, as a me, as, just to me, Katie Griggs should be on the phone with you, kissing your ass, and like literally, they should be doing anything and everything for people like you and I who actually want to promote the sport, the team in a lacrosse town, in a Ravens culture, just in a general. You and I should be at the ballpark 30 times this year because we should feel welcome to go. I should be picking you up down Stoneleigh and going, like, literally. And people ask me, well, it's not a lot of fun for me when I go. And Luke and I always have this argument that the strike zone on television, and now that they've made it all automated, I can see the game, which is the strike zone and the movement of the ball, better on television than I
Yeah.
can when I'm out there sitting anywhere, having a good time, having a hot dog for
Well,
$6,
certainly.
$8, or $2. Doesn't matter to me. But there is a point where, like, they have not done a good job of recruiting people back to the game. And I wish they had, because, like, and by the way, Jim Palmer should be sitting with you for 3 or 4 hours. I mean, who's on your hit list this year? Are you, because you're randomly finding people and getting them on.
Randomly.
And I keep thinking to myself, you need to sit with Charles Steinberg for 5 hours, sit with Rick Vaughn for 5 hours, sit
Okay.
with, you know, those are the people to me that tell the stories even better than players. And we keep losing players all the time. And I think that's from the historian part, I want you to find them all, John. I do.
Well, I am working on it, and you mentioned Charles Steinberg. I got him. All
Good.
right, I it has not run yet, and let me tell you, in two parts. It was so long. One of the great Oriole storytellers and one of the great Oriole stories ever, a guy that never set foot on the field. I loved my interview with him, and I'm not taking credit for it. He is so good. And he's now, of course, a pre, you know, he was a Gilman kid who, you know, became a dentist, and then he winds up, he's now the president of a Triple A, the Red Sox Triple A team, and just amazing. So I got him. Rick Vaughn is on my hit list, would be great. You know, I'm going to talk to a few. Last year, I started doing beat writers, old beat writers, and went through a real greatest hits list. You know, Kenny Rosenthal, Tim Kirkjian, Richard Justice, Mark Hyman, and I'm going to do some more of that. My old press box colleagues, definitely going to get them. It is getting harder and harder to get players, and you know, I will find some. And whether or not the Orioles, I don't hear from them on this, and it's just my little corner. It's my little corner
Well, I love your
of the
corner,
internet.
man.
And I don't care who's you know who's helping me or not really, because I'm just doing what I want to do, and so you know it is it's good enough for me. You know, if they want to help, great, but I'm not expecting it.
Well, I'd always dreamed that there'd come a point when Peter was gone that people like you and me, and you know, people like me and Craig Heist, who are no longer here, would go to ball games together for fun. Ginsburg does it all the time. Like, I see him out there having a beer and having a good time. Luke's taking his niece for the first time in May to a game. So there is, you know, that, and I see Grandpa behind you. Like, do your grandkids, are they baseball oriented? Because your kids are, for
Yes,
sure.
absolutely. And you know, yeah, I mean, I think it was last year on Mother's Day, you know, that was the choice. Let's go to a game, all of us. I mean, both my kids are married. I got two grandkids. My immediate family is now eight, and yep, everyone went to the Oriole game. And so, yeah, absolutely. You know, as I wrote in the piece that's running this week, I said, listen, one night at the ballpark, my grandson shook hands with Larry Sheets. I mean, does it get any bigger than that?
Well,
If
it does
that
if you
doesn't,
shake hands with Ben Sheets.
yeah.
Well, we're all
Yeah.
generational around here. John Eisenberg is our guest. I would encourage everyone to go out to his Substack, to his Bird Tape, subscribe, hang out, wait for that Charles Steinberg interview, listen to that Buck Showalter interview and that Fred Lynn interview. That, you know, yours is better than mine, but mine meant more to me because we talked about the Aqua Velva commercial and like all the things that happened back in the day. So,
Fred's great. Great. I really enjoyed
and I had the
it.
senseis on because you inspired me to do that 2 years ago. So every year you get one person that I'm like, I want to get that Oriole on and have that person on. And but I, you know, I'm at the point now where I just want them to be competitive. I want the city to talk about them again and listen to your tapes and be engaged the way it was. And I hope that this is a summer that they can, you know,
Yeah.
resurrect it because I think it's important for the city, John. I really do.
I agree. Could not agree more. And it would be great to see. It's just fun. That's all. It's just fun, and a nice little, as my the city needs it. It's a nice break from the reality of the world we're living in. And so yeah, it would be nice to see.
Something magic happens. March 26th, opening day. John Eisenberg is still doing it better than anybody does it for Bird Tapes and Orioles Insight. And that's it. You're in the rest of your time. No books going on right now. You don't want me to promote any of that, right? You're good.
I'm good. I'm good. Thank you. Yeah, no, my boss.
Semi-retirement.
Yeah, I mean, I still do a fair amount of I mean, I have books that are still selling a lot, especially the league, the one I wrote about the early days of the NFL, and I do a fair amount of interviews with that. I mean, that one is really broken through. It never really stopped selling, which is great for me. I don't, you know, I guess I told a story there that no one had read, or there was an appetite for it because it really does well. So that's sort of given me a lane as a football historian. So I still do a fair amount of interviews with that because that's where a lot of my last books were. So yeah, plenty of that going on. Enough
People
for
don't
my
even
taste.
know, like, you covered the World Cup in 86 and, like, the World Cup's coming to America. So you could talk about the World Cup at length if I wish for you to. And you're an Olympic head, right? Like, you're an Olympic
Yeah.
nerd on the back end of this. My wife was giving me ish the 2 weeks that she was, like, glued to the Peacock all day and the TV and the hockey and the skiing. She's into all of it. She's like, "You're not into the Olympics." I'm like, "Man, Carl Lewis has been in my house. Stop, dude."
Yeah.
I mean, you know, so I
Yeah.
went through a little bit of Mary Lou Retton was my favorite interview ever, ever, ever in 35 years of doing this. Mary Lou Retton was my favorite person to sit with for 15 minutes and BS with, so, and eat ice cream with. So, like, I have an Olympic thing, but you, like, when I have people like you and Shine in, I get out of the way because, like, you had a rich. How many Olympics did you cover?
I did five, I think, or was it six? The winters I did Calgary, Alberta. I did Albertville, France in 92, and I did Lillehammer, which was Tonya and Nancy in 1994, my favorite Olympics by far. And that was the last Winter Olympics where they just had the whole thing up in the mountains somewhere. Lillehammer was not a big town. Now they have them in these big cities, and they put the ski events up in the little where the snow is. Back in Lillehammer, everything was in town, and it was just a little town. It never got above zero, I think, the whole time. There was never a cloud in the sky. 2 weeks of just frigid cold, and these Norwegians, they told me, "Yeah, the weather's beautiful." I said, "When the sun starts to go down, go inside. Go inside because it's going to be really cold." And it was. But a great experience, great fun, and yeah, it definitely, when I look at the cross-country skiing, I turned that on. I said, "Oh yeah, I remember that. I remember being on the side of a mountain with 100,000 Norwegians when their dream team, quote unquote, lost to the Italians, and it was like a national
They
depression.
lost in cross country?
Four by 10K relay was the event of that Olympics in '94. We have our dream team. We're going to win. Blah blah blah." And the Italians trailed him for like three legs in the last to last 100 yards, and they passed him and won, and the dream team lost. And I've never seen sadder people in my life. It's like the best sports event I ever covered was the 4x10K cross country relay at the 1994 Winter Olympics. So yeah, I do have a frame of reference, that's
All
for
right.
sure.
So I told my wife, and this is true. I went to Lillehammer. I was in Lillehammer in 98 during the Nagano Olympics.
Yeah.
My buddy, we had a cheap flight. We went to Amsterdam, we went to Sweden, and we went to Norway just in the dead of winter. And we were up on that hill in Lillehammer. We had a nice hotel in the little village, and there was nobody there. It was completely dead of winter, other than skiing at night. We went out to drink beer at night, and there was like five people out. But everywhere we went in Norway for the 3 days we were there, every television was on the cross country skiing, and so I went out and tried to do it. That was part of the gig, is that I have been on real
Don't do
skis
that.
once in my life at Round Top in my life, twice. I was in Sun Valley. I was on skis. I didn't do very good, but I was in Idaho once. I went to Lillehammer in 1998. So I was only 30 years old. Better shape. And I got on cross country skis. We went out to the woods. We rented the skis for $75, whatever. The nice Norwegian guy slapped them on me. John, I didn't make it from here to there before I'm like, Nah, cross country skiing is not for me. And then last week, I'm watching those guys like try to go up the hill. And I'm thinking, and now you're telling me you've attended 25 Super Bowls, you've been all over the world, that your favorite thing you ever covered was cross country skiing in Lillehammer.
It's like the greatest sports event I've ever seen. And it
It was
was, it was that
authentic, right? It was
so
real, right?
authentic. It was so authentic. It wasn't judged. It wasn't, it
And you're wondering,
wasn't,
where do these people park?
oh my gosh, there's literally 100,000
On a hill.
people camping out. People camped out on the course for like 2 weeks to watch
In the
this.
cold.
It was in the cold, and it was
Oh.
as it's so it was just great sports. It's
All
just
right.
as good as it gets, really.
I have a picture of me struggling on my cross country skis in Norway that I'm gonna at some point find and show to my wife, because she didn't believe any of this until I started pulling pictures out of Bonnie Blair and Dan Jansen. You know what I mean? You have to go. You're like, your grandkids aren't gonna believe that Grandpa John covered, the World Cup with Maradona in it, but you did. So anyway, keep your memories. That's what all we got at this point are bird tapes and memories. John Eisenberg has been my friend and mentor for 40 years. Go follow him out at Bird Tapes. And man, I get stories of Lillehammer out of you. That's what makes this good. I'm Nestor. We are WNSD AM 1570. We never stop talking. Baltimore positive and Lillehammer cold.